cliffcentral.com. Well, welcome back to the Business Masterclass. This business skills conversation is presented in association with USB Ed. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, hosting the first part of the masterclass today. Joining me in studio is Ellis Mnyandu, former editor of the Business Report and CEO of Candid Media. Ellis, nice to have you with us.
Good to be here, Richard.
So last time we talked about determination, self-motivation, and purpose. Ms. Kumo Shongwe was our guest from USB Ed. Today's theme is about measuring customer experience and what that's about. We're also joined by SMEs in studio. They're going to be joining us and asking us questions as we go along. As part of that question and answer session, they also get 30 seconds prior to starting to just pitch their business. So they get 30 seconds to give us their what we call our elevator pitch, and then to ask a question or make a statement about the concept that we're talking about. So today's guest is Dr. Milani Prinsloo from a company called Infusion, a boutique research house with a specific focus on giving more people more opportunities to participate in a more inclusive business environment. Milani has been heading up this organization for more than 15 years, so well-versed in the world of boutique research. Other than this, she also has some retail and some construction businesses, so quite a nice diversified and sound knowledge of business in the South African context. Milani also lectures at business schools both in South Africa and in Europe, and it's in this role as a member of the USB Ed faculty that she joins us today. Welcome, Milani. Thanks for joining us. Thank you. Now, it's been said that improving customer experience doesn't have to be a guessing game. There are metrics that you can use as a benchmark, and improving the experience for your customers and guiding your customer experience strategy is critical and will help you create a more happier, loyal customer. However, in the past, customer experience strategy has often been guided by, I guess, let's call it calculated guesses. I make a change, have a look and say, okay, people seem a little happier. So I make a note and say, that's what makes people happy and that's what makes them want to engage. And if something goes wrong, I make a mental note, okay, let's get rid of that and let's make sure that's not part of the picture anymore. But I guess those mental notes are kind of a thing of the past. We now have moved to a world where information and systems and processes actually drive our world. So perhaps let's start off with the basics, Milani. I mean, what is customer experience? Just define that for our listeners. Give us some insights.
Okay. When we look at customer experience, one of the big things in terms of where it goes wrong is that the definition of customer experience is made too narrow. So on the one side, yes, you can devise very interesting instruments these days. You can use quite a lot of social media. It can be quite accurately and quite cheaply measured, and to make sure that you do not just rely on those mental notes. But yet when we look at customer experience, we look at the entire experience of the customer with all the services and touch points that they do go through with the organization side. So one can literally think of it to say that the customer thinks that I am going to look for a certain business offering. From that moment, the customer experience starts kicking in. Whether I go to your website, whether I look at your Twitter, whether I go on Facebook to see what is there, even if I do travel in your direction, where do I park? How do I find the place? What is the signage? When I approach a building, and I mean, there's even garden services going on around there, and people are not making place for that. Or you walk in and somebody is busy cleaning the reception area and not acknowledging the customer walking in. And then there's the reception side of that. So often we look at it narrowly and we look at the critical touch point of where the sale has to happen. But by that time, the customer's experience has already been cast in stone by a very wide experience from the customer side from the moment when they decided to use the service. So that's the most critical thing, is to first do like a process map or a critical path map to say this is all the touch point that the customer is experiencing from my side, and then from there on to say what is worth measuring in.
I find that really interesting that you identify that whole value chain, because it really shows that customer experience is more than just what you do at the point of sale, because I think people often talk about that.
Definitely,
I must say it brings out if you talk that value chain and how you experience things as a customer. I just have two distinct organizations in my mind where I've experienced a really different, let's call it, customer interaction. The first one is I had the opportunity not too long ago to travel to Famous Brands, to their head office. And we walked through the front door, and I don't know how Kevin Hedwick and his team have got this right, but the lady behind that front desk, I tell you, she lives, eats, and drinks, and sleeps a brand value of engagement and connection with the customers and the people who are going into Famous Brands head office.
Lovely.
And I actually complimented them and said, you know, she really, really made us as guests feel welcome. And, you know, it was one of those experiences where I thought, okay, if I had to make a judgment call just on that interaction, I would want to do business with this organization. I would want to be a customer of this organization. These people actually care what's going on, as opposed to a traditional head office type of environment where often you just, you know, yes, what can I do for you, kind of attitude. The other organization that I've interestingly had a very positive experience with behind the reception desk on a greeting is at Rand Merchant Bank. For some reason, they have really gone out of their way at RMB to actually engage their receptionists in the importance of what they do. And yes, they're a specialist financial institution and operating in the high-end corporate space as a merchant bank. But what I find so amazing is that the people behind the desk have the ability to greet you and interact with you as if they met you yesterday. And sorry, I can't recall your name. Who are you here to see? You know, kind of feeling. And I mean, I guess, you know, I always take those two elements and I think to myself, wow, wouldn't it be great if the call center for, let's pick a financial institution, an insurance company, you name it, Mnet, any of these large call centers, if they could just answer the phone and talk to me the same way as those two sets of receptionists.
Yes.
Boy, I would be engaged very differently.
This is a feeling of ownership, is it not? In that the person is really part of the value that is giving to the customer, and that they are not divorced from that. Because that is a lot of the problem as soon as businesses become large as well, is the concept of ownership becomes more foreign, and the idea of who is looking after the customer becomes something that the marketing department does, rather than this idea of we are all here to serve a specific customer.
Yeah.
I mean, when you look at just the detail that you have given, that is so perfect. And the higher the employee satisfaction and the better the employee's engagement with their job, the higher the value that is presented to the customer or anybody walking into that organization. I mean, okay. I've had the same type of experiences from one day when I walked into the offices of a furniture removal organization. And I think, like, you know, it was so fascinating. I parked my car, I walked into reception, and the lady at reception says, good day, Melanie. I see that you're here to see Greg. I let Greg know that you're here. He'll be in 5 minutes. Can I get you something to drink? And I'm like, what? And what basically happened was, the security guard signed me in. He phoned my name through to the receptionist, who then made a note of that, and when I walked through the door, greeted me by name. That is somebody that cares about the service that they are delivering and that want to create positive relationships with customers.
I have a question here. I think we're talking much more broadly about customer experience, but to a layperson, what's the distinction, Melon, between customer experience and customer service? Do the two walk hand in hand? Because I think it's interesting that Richard points to an example that involved you going to a head office.
Mm.
But I wonder what would the story be if you went to a Wimpy around the corner, which is one of their shops.
Yes. Exactly.
So can you maybe just help us distinguish what comes first? okay, experience or service.
The idea of customer experience, where they broadened the term, is where the problem came in that companies look at it as customer service. So I will be a service provider, and what do? I start off a customer service center where people go for service. But then looking at it broader to say, but what is the experience that the customer service center gives, or heaven forbid, the call center? And I mean, we've all been in those queues. We've all had those type of treatments where the broader understanding of every emotion that the customer experiences is something that becomes an indicator of whether they would want to do business with the company or whether they're not going to want to do business with that. We can do as many measurements of customer service. We can do it so well in that to say this is the level of customer service, and yet it does not give us a very good indicator of whether the person is coming back. So it's the retention rate that comes in there. When the person has a very good customer experience, their tendency to revisit the organization increases. Now, this is where the trick then comes in. I have to give the person a good experience in the way they value experience. And what we often do as people, I think we were all taught that when we were children, to say, treat other people the way you want to be treated. But fundamentally, if you think about that, is that right? Am I not supposed to treat you the way you want to be treated?
Yeah, because I've got unique needs. I'm a unique person.
Exactly.
I was going to ask that question because, I mean, the reality is you can also almost, let me call it, over-service a customer.
On aspects that makes no difference to them and that costs you a bundle of money.
I mean, I'll give you a classic example. If I take a vehicle in for a service, okay, to have a service done. If you phone me the next day and ask me how the service was, I've got a busy business day. I would probably want to rate your service using an SMS because you look at my profile and understand what I'm doing. I don't want to be taking phone calls. What I really, really don't appreciate is the third phone call. At that point, whether they gave me a brilliant service the day or 2 days before at X brand, and I'm not going to go there, I'm actually at the point where I'm like, no, actually, could I please speak to your manager about how you're giving me service right now? Because right now, you're pushing your customer experience into the negative zone.
Exactly, with high levels of customer service.
Service, yes. So you're trying to serve my needs and ask me what I want, but you're asking me for the third time. And quite frankly, I'm now irritated.
Yes. And I mean, it's similar to that. A while ago, I always said, you know, these companies are becoming very powerful. One has to be very careful because I got a happy birthday message three times from the same company in the same year. Now, I don't want to age accordingly. And so when we look at the customer experience, and you cannot do that. It has to be authentic. It has to be real. It has to matter.
Okay.
I also think, I mean, just broadly thinking here, based on what you've said, Melanie, that choice also has a very critical role in how the experience, you know, comes through. Because if I, as a customer, I don't feel that I have any choice, obviously what's going to happen is that I'm going to just suck it up. But that doesn't serve the business.
No.
Okay.
But isn't that the case in South Africa?
Often.
That generally, since we have such a small economy, people find that they've got no choice. Essentially, these awful companies with the awful experience and service are often the big players in their space. So what do you do in that case?
I mean, what we are seeing is, yes, companies are very complacent because there's often a lack of offerings. As soon as another offering comes in, we do understand the fact that that company will be wiped. So in no ways can we sit comfortably and say, yes, but you know, my customer does not have the choices. We do have to look at the way choices are expanding. And especially when we look at a world where potential boundaries and borders are starting to fall away and there will be more competition, and those will be the first ones that will leave.
Mm. Okay, we're going to go to our studio audience. We have a question out there. Go ahead. Please put your business first. Tell us who you are and put your business, and then give us your question.
Hi, I'm Les Conn. My business is Artsall South Africa, a visual arts consultancy. I'm very interested in this conversation, and I have to declare I have a personal interest because I have a husband who actually operates in the service field. And certainly everything that was said is very relevant and very accurate in terms of customer experience. However, there is one point that I'd like to take a little further. I not only want to be greeted pleasantly in all the ways that have been mentioned, which I won't repeat, I want somebody to solve my problem. This is where customer service goes to the next level, not just for the company to measure how good was their interaction with me as the customer, but somebody who has greeted me, made me feel that they are interested in my problem, and then comes the crunch. Actually can do something about it, or point me to the person who can action it, or can take me through a process that leaves me with a resolution to my problem, which is exactly what, of course, call centers don't. Call centers give you the mantra, repeated endlessly, but never can solve the problem. Mm. Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Powerful words, Les.
Very powerful words. And I think that the critical thing for me is when you measure, and I think we can get to that as part of the statement here, is when you measure when do you measure customer experience? And it's not you measure it after you've been greeted at the front door, as suggested. You actually should be measuring customer experience when? Milani?
And the what technology has afforded us is that the customer should be able to have an opinion when they want an opinion. Mm. We do see where there's quite a lot of research fatigue in the markets, where people are answering too many questions. And so often, I mean, what we've learned over time in a research company, very humbling lessons about the fact that as research companies, we get the questions wrong that is going. We can get the answers, but we ask the questions that's interesting for us. So we measure the value we want to deliver and not necessarily the value the person wants to receive. So just a couple of things, if we refer a little bit back to the theory of that. And yes, sure, like we said in the beginning, it is important that somebody cares, that there's empathy in the situation, that people are acknowledged. But when we look at the actual measurement, there's several other things that become very important. We want to know whether the person had access when they wanted to have access to service in that. How responsive the service was at that point in time.
So response times are critical.
Critical. And often...
And a response is complete response. So not only just the greeting, but actually can you solve? So,
but also telling me how you're going to do that, because so often the person will hear what you are saying. Yes, they do go to do that, but have you ever stood in front of somebody and you ask them someone and they turn around and they walk away? They don't tell you, look, I will have to phone X, Y, and Z, or let me just check this. They just don't communicate with you at that point in time.
Away from that interaction point, and you wonder, are they going to the bathroom or going for lunch? Or it feels a little like you're at the Department of Home Affairs. You're not quite sure where that person's going.
Should I go? What is that? So that concept of responsiveness at the right point in time. In another thing that is very important here, then, and I think that will very much link onto that, is the question of reliability. Did you do what you said you are going to do?
Which goes to Liz's point of I'm asking a question, or I'm asking for something. Am I getting the reliable feedback, or am I getting something else back, which I didn't even ask for?
Yes.
So critical.
And in some cases, it's good if somebody will understand the further part of the problem and they can expand, but not without solving my specific problem in. Mm. Another aspect of measurement that is very important, that's often understated, is our ability to give consistent service as well. Because it's not just about getting service now, it's getting the same service every time. Mm. If I go to your service center and I'm helped in 5 minutes, and then the next time I go, I'm helped in an hour and a half. That doesn't really help for my own planning of my day. And even in those cases, if people know, look, if I'm going to the service center, I need 20 minutes in, then people do plan for those 20 minutes. It's when that 20 minutes is not consistent that the problem becomes really crucial for people. And then the last thing that we sometimes underestimate the importance of is the tangibles in. You're standing in front of somebody, and how they react is very important. What they look like, their facial expressions, whether they convey a feeling of trust to the person. So I know what you are talking about. I care about what you are saying, and the person looks the professional part. These things come together in the measurement.
Now, can I ask an interesting question? Because as somebody who works in the research house space, you'd possibly have an inkling on this. There have often been debates about how call center agents and service center agents that deal telephonically with customers should come dressed to work. And I know I've often had this debate, and my attitude was simply, and it's been my personal experiences, I do believe in the principle of the way people dress is conveyed in their tone and their mannerisms on the telephone and in the auditory space. And I did a little experiment where I allowed a call center environment to come to work casually dressed on one day of the week, and then formally dressed, so shirt, collared shirt with a tie, smart pants, etc., on other days of the week. And I then looked at the measures of customer satisfaction and customer service, and I was amazed at how on the days when the guys were casual, the service levels were not perceived to be at the same level as the other days of the week. And I initially thought, nah, that's just coincidence. And we measured it over a period of time. And we came to the conclusion that for the team we were working with, how they dressed is how they acted on the phone. And I explored this with other people over a period of time. And I got the same, and I guess this is once again back to this gut feel, but many people have said that they've had similar experiences. What's your view on things like that?
Tangibles count more than what we think.
Okay.
And people do act according to their environments. We see it from the research that has been done even on sick building syndrome. Now, you mentioned home affairs the other day. But if you sometimes look at the environments that some people have to give service in, you can imagine that it's quite demoralizing in some of those environments. Where when people are in more positive environments and more beautiful environments, they also feel proud to be part of that. There's a direct relationship to the amount of pride that the person feels to be part of the organization and part of the team and what they deliver. And in that, tangibles matter, because tangible is the only one that we can see to say, this is what we stand for. We are professionals. We are geared. We want to deliver this type of services. So, no, it really does matter.
Interestingly, I did a bit of work with an organization I won't name, whose corporate colors involved red. And one of the pieces of advice that they were given was to not have red in their call centers as they, as part of their corporate color scenario. And, you know, somebody said to them, well, you know, or the question was asked, why would that be? And the response was, because it increases aggression levels with people when they sit in an environment that's got a lot of red, in it, and they're dealing with customers all day, every day, it actually lifts the aggression levels in the conversations. And I was, okay, didn't think about that.
Come on, Richard.
So what's the situation
at Vodacom right now?
Like I said, no organizations mentioned. So, yeah, it's interesting that the psyche of the people giving the service also plays an important part.
They now call it atmospherics.
Atmospherics,
there's quite a lot of research done on it. The type of lighting, the type of colors, the temperature and the room, even the smell, where they say in a lemon sense, people make less mistakes.
Can I just jump in here, Melanie? I mean, what you're saying, obviously there would be a science to it, you know, what these intangibles would mean in terms of driving, you know, the business and optimizing how people feel within a particular environment. But if these are so critical, why is it for no one, not everyone doing this?
Yeah, that's a big question.
Because we can theorize about these sort of intangibles and things, but only a certain companies actually do this and you see results.
I think a lot of times, if you take my previous, when I started talking about how important employee engagement is in customer experiences, I mean, those links have been obvious for a very, very long time. Even when you look at the theory behind that, it's called the service profit chain. And it very clearly shows that when your employee satisfaction increases, so does your customer satisfaction in. And when your customer satisfaction and the full experience increases, so does your loyalty. And when the loyalty and retention increases, so does the amount of money that you earn. And I mean, these things have been communicated for a very long time, but often people still look at customer experience from a marketing point of view. Look at the advertising that we have done, and yet our marketing is always under fire for a lack of return on investment.
Sure.
But yet, when we look at customer experience, this is when the marketing already worked. The customer has now walked through the doors. The customer has now made contact with you. And now who do they encounter? They encounter the employee and they encounter the environment. So those are the elements that I can work with in. I cannot advertise better service. I deliver better service in. And that's where the intangibles and the employee satisfaction comes in as the main ingredients that makes it happen.
So perhaps in time, I mean, everyone is talking about this fourth industrial revolution where we're going to have a lot of automation, you know, for things that happen. But, you know, is there automation happening in the call center space, for example, which you would then assume would make things much more agile and, you know, proactive in terms of dealing with the customer?
Oh, definitely. And just the access to technology and the way operational system information becomes available to call center agents is very important. But again, then we will have to have a look at the type of training that the call center agents get. Mm. When we look at the more advanced call centers, you sit with PhDs that works in call centers. We see how doctors will more and more work in call centers and will do remote assessments of patients. Mm. So call centers are going to become extremely advanced delivery mechanisms with fantastic information. And if we can get the combination between empathy, somebody that really cares about the customer's experience, combined with the right information, the service level should increase. And when you combine that then with a measurement tool where a person can in an instant go on a social media tool to send their feedback and somebody react immediately, then the chain connects much faster.
Well, you talked about consistency earlier on. I mean, I wonder, why is it, say, you go buy a car? Often when you're on the buying side, the experience is different from when you're going in to service your car. Why is that?
Because you've got the money and they want it from you. Once they've got your money...
It's called commission.
Commission-driven selling.
So consistency goes out of the window.
Yeah. And I mean, how often companies do not focus on acquisition campaigns rather than retention campaigns? It's like arriving at your gym. And what do they say? You are there for 15 years. You go to this gym and you walk through the gym. And what do they say? If you are a new client, you can get this lovely gym bag, this lovely water bottle, this lovely towel and all of that. If, however, you've been loyal, just walk on pie. So what are we doing? What are we measuring in that? It has to be the retention question that is on the table. And that's where the consistent measuring comes in.
Globally, do you have an example of a company that just gets it in terms of the impeccable side of customer experience?
I mean, when we look at that's a very difficult one to say because it's just so inconsistent.
Is it Apple? Would Apple be in that space?
Well, when you look at some of Apple's supply chain practices, when you look at some of their employee cases, then it is highly problematic. Okay. From a brand experience, they've done it quite well. And do remember that Steve Jobs was the person that said, never ask your customer what they want. They will always mislead you.
wrong brand. I just want to go quickly to the audience, quickly to get a comment.
Hello. Liz. Just very briefly to expand on Milani's comment and your question about how with the marketing, the advertising, etc. Of course, things have moved fundamentally as a result of social media because now you don't advertise to me as the customer. I now answer back and tell you what I would like, not what you want to sell me. And I tell you exactly what I feel about your products, your services, the experience of your service. And it's a very powerful new way of the customer engaging the experience.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Customer engagement is the new word that everybody's throwing around now after the customer experience. It's customer engagement because there is a sense of to what degree is the customer willing to engage, willing to sacrifice their own time and resources to contribute potentially to your strategy. Mm. Now, what we have seen in practice is, yes, people can put absolute horrible information on Hello Peter or on a website or a blog in, but the faster you react and the faster you react personally in. Now, a person in a position of authority that phones a customer 2 minutes after they post that to say, I saw that you posted that. I am the manager at that shop. I would like to hear what your experience was. And that's willing to listen and willing. People are caught so off guard by that. Lately, we've been working a lot with Sorbet, the salons in. And that's the one thing that is part of the Holy Grail. And when a guest complains, comes in, you phone back immediately. And I mean, people will be so upset about something going wrong. And yet, when they, within a minute or an hour after they posted that, and somebody phones to say, look, it really matters to us that that actually happened in, how quickly people will say, I'll give you another chance in. And it's not nice to make the call, because, you know, you also feel like, this is quite difficult in. But the faster the reaction time and the more sincere it is in, the faster the problem then disappears.
Exactly. Dr. Melanie Prinsloo, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate your insights and what you've helped us learn about. Next week, we're going to be talking about procurement, planning and sourcing, and the entire procurement chain. If you want to join our live studio, SME studio audience, drop us a line, drop Kevin a line. His email address, kevin@leadershipplatform.com. And we're going to get a little bit more practical now. We're going to move to our SME development conversation shortly. Joining us will be Arthur Anderson from Africa's Got Game, and we're going to be talking about what they're up to. Thank you.
At Sibanye Gold, we've come to realize that there's nothing small about SMMEs, the small to medium-sized businesses that employ millions of people and pay billions in tax every year. Which is why we pride ourselves in providing support, leadership coaching, assistance and advice to help grow SMMEs.
You could say we're giving them a golden opportunity to grow. Sibanye Gold, we are one.
Cliffcentral.com.